हरे हे सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
some questions over here. Anyone has a question or something? Some topic, anything? No. All questions are answered. Fully self-realized. Yeah? Yeah.
Prabhupada was saying, looking at our purports, unless we're acting like pure devotees, we still have a rebellious spirit.
So what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay. So in third canto in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying, unless we're pure devotees, we still have a rebellious spirit. So, I mean, a few angles you can look at it. One would be the mood of a separatist. Someone in the devotional service mixed with ignorance or passion, then is a separatist. So, they have plans and ideas that are different from Krishna's. You know? I mean, they all kind of connect to Krishna, but they have their own idea. And you know, they do things that aren't necessarily that they are willing to connect to Krishna. Either they won't think about them, or if they do, then they're rationalized. Right? We were discussing about the anartas. If you're critical towards devotees, right, that category, that will create weakness of heart. That weakness of heart, then, because of ego, means if you're more advanced, it's one thing. But if you're not, then one will then rationalize. So one will create one's own bogus philosophies. Right? Then from that, then one will fall into just gross sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? So weakness of heart knows you know it's not correct, but you don't have the strength to not be involved. You know, the other one is it's just that's your taste, you just go for that. You know, either it may be more innocent in that you don't think about it, you know, but it just happens. Or it may be now it's your determination. You know, but that's because you're based on your funny philosophy. You know, so it's either not an understanding of the philosophy or one has created one's philosophy. You know, I'm being real. You know, it's practical. Everybody does it. These kind of things. Then you're creating. If it's just a matter you didn't think about it, it's just the way it is. You know, the tribals are out there, they're eating their bugs, and, you know, they just thought that's normal, right? You know, so then, does that make sense? Slight difference. So that's why the Madhyama makes a distinction between someone who's innocent and someone who's not, you know? So in any case, then this mode of passion and ignorance, that will create a rebelliousness on that level. Because we have to remember here is pure devotee starts from Madhyamadhikari, right? You know, Madhyama is not rebellious, right? They're at the lowest state of pure devotional service, but they are pure devotees. This fact is probably seriously missed by a majority of the Vaishnava community, right? Because when we say pure devotee, then that means you dropped out of the spiritual world, right? We say liberated, it means dropped out of the spiritual world. You know, we hear advanced, so it's dropped out of the spiritual world, right? So it's like you have Prabhupada, and then you have all the other schnooks that you somehow or another got to tolerate, right? So, but that mentality is not very useful like that. So, but according to the Acharyas, pure devotee means starting from nishta, right? So the Madhyama would be considered the, you know, beginning stages of pure devotional service. The Uttama would be considered the middle stage, and someone on the platform of prema would be considered on the advanced, the highest stage. Does that make sense? So it's slightly shifted over. Because technically the neophyte, though it's not discussed much, is not actually really counted as a devotee. Because devotees don't criticize other devotees, devotees don't engage in material activities and say it's fine. You know, they don't make excuses for it. Devotees don't do that. But it's recognized that the neophyte is just in a stage where they're having to wrestle with their material desires, so those become so prominent. You know, in this path. Is that too much there? So, okay. It just keeps away the mosquitoes. Hey, move that over a little bit.
That's fine.
That's okay? Okay. So then, therefore, because of that sincere attempt at devotional service, though what they're doing may or may not be so great, they're given association. Otherwise, technically, the Madhyama is because you're supposed to associate with someone more advanced than yourself, and someone that doesn't have qualities that you're trying to avoid. So then what would happen is the Madhyamas would avoid the association of neophytes. You understand? So therefore, they're categorized as devotees, dealt with as devotees, so that they'll get that Madhyama association. You understand? But unfortunately, the neophytes don't appreciate the platform of the Madhyama and how important it is, how advanced it is, how all their mercy is coming through that platform. Like that. So then that creates, you know, can create social disharmony or philosophical misunderstanding. Because then one doesn't have faith, because unless one's dropped out of the spiritual world, then, you know, one can't have any good qualities. But that, of course, that takes someone without good qualities to make that statement. Right? Someone with good qualities only sees good. Right? You know, like that. So that will be one of the elements, is that separatist, you know. The other is that one will be on much of the time neutral towards Krishna. This is another aspect, is that one's going to be favorable towards Krishna when one's conscious of it. But when one's not conscious, one is actually just in the neutral state. And neutral always ends up in becoming inimical. You understand? If I don't interact with someone and just avoid someone, I will become with time inimical. You understand? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes that's how we get into the material world. Because we're not paying attention to Krishna. Right? He's not the most important thing to us. So therefore, with time, that becomes inimical. You understand? So then we come into the material world. So that neutral state naturally goes down. Otherwise, how can we be neutral? Right? Affection is positive. It has to be moving. How do you remain neutral? You know what I'm saying? Neutral means no relationship. You understand? That's why if you've upset somebody in all this, and then you're trying to make it up with them and all that, and they just sit there and say nothing and make no reaction. You would rather have them come and yell and scream or beat you in something. If something's going on, but just to sit there and you don't know what's happening, that's the worst, isn't it? Why? Because there's no relationship. You understand? That's the whole point. This is very much mistaken. If somebody is speaking against you or this or that, then you consider, oh, this is bad, but actually worse is neutral. They just ignore you. You don't exist to them. You don't matter. You understand? The other way, at least there's some relation. It may not be great, but it's something. Yes? Sorry. Inimical means that you are... your mentality is not favorable towards someone or something. You know what I'm saying? You don't really like it. You know what I'm saying? It's an attitude, right? But from attitude comes action. That's why it's so important to deal with, right? Does that make sense? So this element's in another very important aspect, is that we've come here with that, so naturally we're already rebellious, because we're just doing our own thing. We think we're the controller and enjoyer. That has to be rebellious, because that only God's in that position. He is the controller, he's the enjoyer. So if we're saying we're God, then, or if not, that we're accepting God, but we're still putting on ourselves in the position of controller and enjoyer, that's rebellious. Right? So with Madhyama, the Madhyama platform, then that begins to balance. You see yourself as servant, you identify. You may not be on the strongest position, because it's also within spirit, it's neutral between material and spiritual. Right? But it's progressive towards spiritual. Does that make sense? So the person's inclination is towards spiritual, their determination is that, their endeavor is that, they may or may not be that successful in it. Right? But that's just the stage of nishta. Once they get to ruchi, then it becomes very dynamic. Because once one has a taste for something, then one progresses very quickly. Right? Once the taste is there. So in that point of nishta, then you know, one is working on the intelligence. When the intelligence is able to control the mind, one is able to manage one's anarthas now. Basically, they've been reduced to the point of manageability. Right? It doesn't mean they've gone away, because until you get to prema, they haven't gone away, right? Completely. There's subtler and subtler, subtler anarthas. Like that. But what we call anarthas, the gross form, in other words, we're saying the anarthas, removal of these anarthas, is that's important for the neophyte. But the neophyte sees the gross, right? So therefore, that's what we mean by that. Does that make sense? So therefore, you come to the platform of anartha nivriti, then you cross that, this nishta, right? You're fixed in sadhana bhakti, right? But the next stage of that is when you come to, you cross anartha nivriti, means you cross your conditioned nature, and you're working within your constitutional nature, right? Then you're fixed in bhava bhakti. You understand? All these, it's the same formulas, just they become adjusted. So there's your main, you know, your, it means, in other words, your very observable manifestation of something, right? Then you have in other words, you have your physical, metaphysical, spiritual. Does that make sense? It's the same formula. There's no difference, right? Sometimes we'll take it that material works on one thing, spiritual in another, but that's an impersonal concept. If the spiritual and the material are created by the same person, they're going to have a lot of the same motif, isn't it? The vernacular is going to be the same. Does that make sense? It's going to be the same building blocks, right? The painter paints a picture. He paints a landscape, or he paints a portrait. The techniques are the same, the canvas, the oils, this, but just what comes out of it is something different. Right? Does that make sense? What happened to your smoke? Rebellious.
Yeah.
Rebellious. 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 He knows. Like that. His brother's more expert, though. Rebellious means you don't like to follow or do what you're supposed to do. Right? You know what you're supposed to do, but you don't like to do it. Yeah, sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. Like that. So basically everyone in the material world is rebellious. It's just some are more dignified or sophisticated about it, some are not. So like that. You know, like that. You know, like climbing up the banister and yelling and screaming at the top of your lungs, that's more obvious. You know what I'm saying? He's not here today though, but okay. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that rebellion goes down at that. It starts to go down in the stages. At prema, it's gone. One is situated in one's natural position. Because otherwise, even at bhava, you're still dealing with the neutral aspect. Now you're dealing with a non-conditional tatastha situation. While we're in the material world, then we're dealing with a conditioned tatastha position. Right? So the tatastha position can be favorable for prema if the association is right. One will move forward. But if it's not, one will naturally slip down. That's how we get to this position. So that's why it's always the devotional process must be dynamic. It must be interactive. So it's not that we have a repulsion for anything. Sometimes it's taken that not being material means being repulsed by it. But that doesn't really, that's not actually favorable. Is you don't have a need for it. So if you're in the neutral state, then if there's something positive, it will gravitate towards that. But if there's nothing positive, it will come back. Right? Just like the impersonalists, they've situated themselves on the Brahman platform, but there's nothing to draw them forward, so they will fall back. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Yeah. In other words, it's easy. The us and them thing is, you know, sense gratification is bad, so it's bad. I'm okay, but it's bad. No, the point is it's fine if it's engaged in Krishna's service. We're bad because we want to use it for ourselves. We're rebellious. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing that's not useful. Right? It's just a matter of understanding that. Does that sound make sense? Is that okay? Okay. Something else? Anything else? Nothing else? No questions? It's been a long day. Yes?
Can you give a typical example of criticism?
A typical example of criticism.
The senior tries to point out, you know, you're hypocritical, why you're criticizing? And he generally, the response is, I'm not criticizing, I'm just, you know, pointing out facts.
I'm just pointing out facts. Okay. I'm not being critical. Critical, I mean, from what I can see, critical would be defined as making a negative observation about another devotee when you're not in a position to or unwilling to take responsibility for helping them correct that situation. That would be critical. Because facts are facts, so what? I was just making an observation. Okay, why don't you just tell us an observation of when you went to the toilet this morning, you know, what happened, you know, give us colors, smells, sounds, you know, give us the full, you know. That's truth, right? Truth is important. Truth must be discussed. Truth must be out on the table for everybody. So let's have some truth, you know, like that. You know, so therefore this idea of truth by the modern man is just cheating. Modern man is a cheater. It's just that there's no other term. It's just he's a cheater. He's conditioned, he's cheating. But if he's willing to recognize that and try to bring his mentality in line with the Vedic, then it's called progressive. We don't call him a cheater anymore. Even though there may be some conditioned, habits of cheating that'll come up just because they happen. But we don't classify like that. You know, like the child is starting to going to school, we don't say he's ignorant, right? The kid's in first grade, he still doesn't know how to read or write. We don't say he's an idiot, he knows nothing. No, we say he's a student, he's learning. Like that. So in the same way as if someone takes that progressive mentality, that's good. But this whole modern idea of truth, but how do you define truth? Krishna defines truth mean that which is connected to him. And these facts that they're saying aren't connected to Krishna. So then by whose definition is truth? Therefore, they're working on the condition platform as truth means what is important to me. This is my world, so therefore this is my reality, therefore this is my truth. Therefore, I am just working in my world and imposing my world on everybody else. It's cheating. But because everybody does it, everybody goes along with it. Right? You know, everybody has green spiked hair, so therefore it seems normal. Right? But for others, it's maybe a little strange. You know? Like that. So, it's just how you say, what Prabhupada calls is a group of fools get together, and because they all pat each other on the back, then they think, you know, this is the world. You know, we are the world. Like that. But unfortunately, they're not. You know, they may be very well recognized and very, you know, whatever it is, enjoy a good position according to some element of pop, you know, whatever it is, volume of acceptance. But in reality, actual truth, they don't know what they're talking about. So this idea is that, and what would be a motive for this? Why would one want to speak that truth? Because so many truths are there. Your grandmother just died. You know, your father divorced your mother. You know, your sister is practically a prostitute. You know, your dog just peed on the rug. I mean, there's so many facts you could get into. The garbage has to be taken out. You know, but we don't talk about those things. Why not? They're facts. So why this fact is being, why this is the topic? So many facts are there, you know, like that. You know, just discussed, I think it was in Dubai, you know, they just made the tallest building in the world. They just went past the, where was it? I think it was the Malaysia had the tallest, or Singapore?
Kuala Lumpur.
Huh?
Kuala Lumpur. Yeah, okay. Highest building.
Okay, you know how high it was?
No.
Oh, okay. Just check. So you're up on your facts. You know, they're very important these days. So then that's a fact. So, but, oh no, that's nonsense. What do you mean it's nonsense? Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear in Bhakti Aloka that in commenting on Rupa Goswami's verse on Prajalpa and Niyamagraha, that Prajalpa includes just free talking about and critically observing devotees. So unless your criticism is going to result in actually a furtherance of somebody's devotional life, it is prajalpa, even though it's about devotees. And there's no difference in that. In fact, that's probably worse prajalpa than if, you know, you picked up the local, you know, how you say, you know, filmy magazine and are making comments about different actors or politicians or, you know, like this. Because they're not devotees. You criticize them, hey, okay. But you criticize devotees, that's going to be bad. But one of the motives to do it is if I can find fault in the other, that means I'm actually in the senior position. So I boost myself up by stepping on the heads of everybody else. Very common platform. It's actually, if we want to be very... I say, is there another synonym for blunt?
Straightforward
or real?
Direct.
Huh?
Direct.
Yeah, direct would be the thing here. Is that's a feminine mentality. You know, for amongst the female order, you have to figure out who's the boss. They can't just work together. It has to be who's, you know, senior, who's junior. They accept it, they have a relationship. They don't accept it, they have no relationship. It is something that is, it is an inherent need amongst females. But the untrained male will, by default, act as a female. They won't accept this. They'll yell and scream, jump up and down, but they actually do. Anyone who understands what male and female nature is, they will understand very clearly this is the problem. Right? Very clearly. So So that's then the way that the conditioned living entity in an untrained, non-progressive position tries to jack themselves up into something higher than what they actually are. Like that. So it'll be automatic. We do it. It also creates security because then I am in control. Right? If I can point out a fault, means I'm in control in a subtle way. And if you can control something, because control is in the same position as security. So fear and control, they're connected. Like that. You create fear, you control. Right? So therefore, you are trying to generate security because the soul, being feminine, is dependent. So you must be able to connect to something. And that connection then one of the symptoms is control, right? The wife can control the husband, therefore she's confident and she feels secure in the relationship. She can't control him in any way. She feels insecure, so therefore the relationship breaks down. So it's an important part of the feminine mentality, or even the need of the soul. But the problem is it's not progressive. It will create a security, but a security in what? In mundane consciousness, right? In mundane social position. So it's just mundane. You don't get anything out of it. And that's why it says, of all the anartas, it's the worst. Right? It's not accepted by the kutinati vadis. They won't accept this. They'll take it that, you know, material desire, material engagement, you know, sense gratification is the worst. But actually it's not. The funny thing is by kutinati you get weakness of heart, which is, that you're susceptible to material desire or sense gratification, right? Then you make up your philosophies, then that throws you straight into material desire. So we notice that of the two, actually the ones that are the catalyst for material desire are, criticizing devotees and misinterpreting the philosophy. So therefore Prabhupada says, that's the worst. But people that do that will never accept that, because that's them. So you always have to have an us and them. So the us is those who, you know, make so many comments that misuse the culture and philosophy for our own purposes, and the them is those people, the weaknesses people are having in their devotional life, even though they may be having them also, but still us and them must be created, right? It's very important, right? So creating this us and them, then we can situate ourselves very nicely, because us is always good, them is always bad, right? Is that okay? I mean, that's okay. You just let it happen more naturally. Especially when it's going like this, just leave it. You know, if it's going straight up, then is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Something else, yes.
Said sense gratification is bad because we use it for ourselves, but not if it is engaged for Krishna.
Yes.
How is that possible?
How is it possible to engage the senses for Krishna?
No. Yeah, just another way. That.
No. Sense gratification means the senses come in contact with the sense objects, right? Right? So now, think about it. What is your connection with this world? How do you function in this world? How do you interact with this world?
Through our senses.
Only through the senses. So therefore, what's wrong with the senses? That's all you got. You don't have something else. Okay? So the problem is if we use the senses only for our own purpose, that's not good. If we connect the senses to Krishna, you know, the use of the senses connected to Krishna, that becomes useful. You understand? That's the point. So, but to do that, much of the time we have to remove ourselves as much as possible from the sensual interaction because of our attachment to sensual interaction. But the problem is not the sensual interaction. The problem is our attachment to it. You understand? Just like you have to eat, right? So eating's not a problem. Is your eating connected to Krishna? Right? That's the point. But because we may not be able to see it in that way, we may reduce and control our eating in such a way until one gets to the point when one becomes detached enough from it, one is able to observe it with a clear intelligence. Then one can see that engage the senses in Krishna's service, that's what's important. Then how much you need to eat, how often you need to eat, that's then not the problem. You know what I'm saying? Somebody has, let's say, an acid condition, so they have to eat 4, 5, 6 times a day. But that's not the problem. It's what they eat for Krishna. Are they eating, taking care of this condition for Krishna? Or are they doing it for themselves? Are they using, oh, now I can eat anytime I want? Or is it now this body belongs to Krishna, and to make it work, I have to eat more often, so therefore, you understand? So that's why it's Krishna consciousness, right? We're not the international society to make you follow all these old archaic rules that somehow or another Vyasadeva and the sages, you know, just put out there for us because they don't do it and they just want to see us suffer because we are attached to our senses, you know, consciousness, right? No, society for Krishna consciousness. The rules are to support the consciousness. Does that make sense? Something else? Yes.
You see, in our society, there's only concentrated on the projects. We didn't have something like this to boost the movement forward, and the people seem to be neglected.
Okay. So when we're doing a project,
yeah, and we engage, okay, everybody does my project, and you know, you play with me, you are my man. If you don't play, you know, kind of this mentality. And now it's more and more emphasized. You know, let's just take care of the people,
and don't do the projects.
And yeah, and it kind of manifests itself. So can you?
Can you? Okay. So you have a project. Everybody engages in the project. They go along nicely with you in the project, and it's great. If not, you're not sincere. Okay, then the reaction of that then is just take care of the devotees, forget all these big projects, and forget, you know, the preaching and all these, because devotees are most important. So how to find a balance? Okay, this point, if you could understand this point, basically every relationship you have, and especially marriages, would go great. If you could understand this one point. See, there's a field of action, and then within that field, then you engage in relationships. You understand? You have a static relationship with the field of action, but you have a dynamic relationship with the elements of the field when, you know, how you say, when they're being operated. Does that make sense? Give an example. Okay, you have a temple. That's a field of action. It's not a goal. Like you say, our goal is to make the temple. But once you have the temple, is it still the goal? No, it becomes part of your field of action. Now we have this field. What are you going to do in that field? Right? Does that make sense? So the idea is then, you know, it's the, what do you call it? The famous, the end justifies the means, right? You know, it worked well. I mean, you know, it worked well in your country a few years ago. And, you know, so like that, you know, it's like a, you know, it was getting a bit too tall, the country. So then by that endeavor, then, you know, it became nicely evened out and balanced and everything like that. So the living entity forgets that. Why do you want a field? Why do you need a field? It's for relationships. It's for interacting with others. The field makes it more favorable. Right? Means you want to have a nice meal. You can have it sitting on the side of the road. right? Because you're just going to stick the food in your mouth. But you go to a nice place and a nice atmosphere, you know, everything's nice about it, it enhances the experience. So the field is not the goal. The field is part of the environment in which the relationship can go on, you know, in a very progressive way. Does that make sense? So the problem is they take the field as everything. So it's their relationship with the field, you know, but it's not dynamic. You say it's dynamic, we're building a temple. Yes, but the point is what about your relationships with everybody else who's helping you do that? And if you say, no, but, you know, the goal justifies the means, no, it doesn't. Because the means is what's going to get you your goal. So if your goal is an empty building, then you're going about it in the right way. But if your goal is a building full of very lively devotees with lots of devotional activity and relationships going on, then your method has nothing to do with your goal. Right? You know what I'm saying? You boil something, when you finish, it will be boiled. You can't say, oh, but it was supposed to be fried. You know? No, it's your method is what gets you your goal. So, therefore, because just establishing the field, that is a masculine principle. That is the principle of control. Right? The rules are there. You make the field. You make it happen. But without Prajumna, Adiruddha, and Vasudev, there is no relationship having. It's just a field. Right? You know what I'm saying? Therefore, we have hundreds of very nice temples with very nice altars, with very nice deities, with nobody in the temple. Why? Because that method was used. And no living entity is interested in that. Absolutely none. There isn't one that can relate to that kind of dealing. Right? Krishna doesn't use it. And therefore, why anybody else would be successful at using it? You want to be God, then at least do it the way God does, you know? Don't make it beyond. I want to be God, but God means this. No, God already has a definition. There's already a role model, right? He's called Krishna. You follow that, you will be successful. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is therefore you see it in the day-to-day. The man thinks, I've got the house, I made the money, I created all the facility, now I can sit back on my couch, watch TV, and read the newspaper. Okay, but what was the house for? So you could read a newspaper and watch television? You had to work that hard, take on a 30-year mortgage so you could watch television and read a newspaper? That's stupid. I mean, that is stupid. You know what I'm saying? You don't need that for... You know what I'm saying? So if they're claiming to be so intelligent and qualified, that's really stupid. So therefore, the house and the furniture and the facilities and the money was so they can interact with their wife and children. That's what it's for. So if they don't interact, then they miss the whole point of what relationships are. Most men, if they really want to know what's wrong in their marriage and why the wife isn't responding and doesn't care, it's exactly this point. But you practically have a zero chance of convincing anyone of that, because they're the man and they know everything. Right? That's all. Little fuzz on the lip, and then you know it all. That's all it takes. You know, that's it. Does that make sense? So it doesn't work for women, it doesn't work for devotees, it doesn't work for anybody. But still they think, I'm doing something. It gets the bile moving, gives them some kind of goal in life and everything, but they don't understand is that you need all these people to get your goals, so therefore why not interact with them as people rather than as parts of your puzzle? You know what I'm saying? In other words, bottom line is the individual is important. Right? Okay? Now we flip it the other way. If you just have relationships and there's no field of action, how it's going to happen? I want to cook, but there's no kitchen. Oh, the kitchen's not important, but we should just cook, you know? Get together and just, you know, cook, you know? Just so many things, just cook, you know? And just this. Now, that's also pretty stupid. It sounds very sweet, you know, use nice language and all that. And these people are just as stubborn as the others. You know, you tell them, you need a field of action. No, the field's not important. It's just the mood. It's the bob. You know, it's just like that. You know what I'm saying? So these same principles, you look at history, you look at everybody's lives, you look at your own life. It's this point, right? What is it? Catholics. It's the rule. It's just the church. It's the way it goes. And then the Protestants, it's just the bob. What do we need all that for? We don't need... Right? So that's the problem. It's there everywhere. That's what I'm saying. This one problem. We can say it's simplistic. That's right. It's so simple. It's amazing. And we're so stupid and stubborn, we won't recognize it or accept it. It's that, like, all we have to do is think of Krishna and we go back to God. It's that simple. All we have to do is chant Hare Krishna. It's that simple. But because we're not that simple, therefore all the other complications come in. Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore, the idea is if one can understand that there are four aspects that has to be in place. Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, Vasudeva. All of them have to be in place. Right? So the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, all have to be in place. You know what I'm saying? So the name is the field, right? Name, the form. But now the form here is specific, so therefore there's interaction. That has qualities, right? Then those qualities then will result in action. Does that make sense? But what they'll try to do is, in the same way I'm trying to be God, right, because I'm the controller, then that Sankarshan aspect they just use and they leave the other three. Therefore, they don't have relationships. That's the problem. So don't worry, it's not that he doesn't have a relationship with you. He doesn't have a relationship with anybody. And that's real. Even if they talk and they laugh and sit around and joke, he doesn't have any relationships. That's a problem. Therefore, Prabhupada has come to give us the Vedic culture, which teaches us what relationships are, and save us from the impersonalism and voidism, where there aren't any relationships. Does an impersonalist have a relationship? No. Does a voidist have a relationship? No. According to their philosophy, they don't. Right? Therefore, if you want to be a personalist, you have to give up these mentalities. Is that okay? So you have to find the balance. In other words, of the two, working with the people is the most important. But as a leader, it's your responsibility to generate as close to possible the most ideal field in which those relationships can prosper. But never at the expense of the relationships. It's never worth it. That one word, that comment, that one thing, you'll spend the rest of your life wishing you never did it. So therefore, that means it wasn't really worth it. You got your result, your observable result, but so what? You know? Does that make sense? You had something?
Maharaj, nowadays there is a lot of indirect preaching.
Indirect preaching.
It's like yoga courses and so many others. And some devotees said that this is like a slight deviation from what Prabhupada teaches.
Okay. So by doing indirect preaching, then is that a deviation from what Prabhupada gave us? It depends how you apply it. Just like taking the rules how Prabhupada gave us and misapplying them is also a deviation. So in other words, you want to go and preach in the yoga circles or, you know, some variety of new agey circle. You know, okay, people are in those circles, right? But the thing is now, what is your purpose in preaching there? How are you connecting it? Because it's a matter of vocabulary. So we can talk about God and teach them about self-realization. Just all we do is use different words. But what we're, the content of what we're saying is exactly the same. Right? Like here, you saw, I went from, you know, our regular philosophy into male-female psychology that someone could apply in their family life. Because there's no difference in them. It's just a matter of the context that you use it in. It's the same thing. So devotees have gotten habituated to using a particular style and vocabulary, which is fine. It works amongst those who are devotees. But the point is for dealing with those in their field, you would use their language. Right? You, Prabhupada made the BI that preached to scientists. What do they use? Scientific language. So if you want to preach to the New Ages, you use their language. But you use it on our definitions, not theirs. Because we have definitions, they don't. You take any one of the thing and ask them what it is. They'll give you a vague idea, but they can't say definitively this is it. But we can. That's why when we go and explain New Age to them, they will listen to us and they will see that there's something higher. Because the metaphysics are the step between, the connection between the physical and the spiritual. Right? So if we can show them that connection, why they want to, they look at the connection between the physical and the metaphysical, but they never look at from metaphysical to spiritual, and how the spiritual therefore is connected to the, I mean the spiritual is connected to the physical. Right? So that's the easy, I mean New Age comes from us, it doesn't come from them. I mean, who made up astrology? Right? Who made up yoga? Right? Who made up any of these things that they're into? Vegetarianism, who made up that? Who made up social work and charity and austerity and sacrifice? Like that. It's us. Who made up art? Who made up music? Who made up drama, dance? It's all coming, it's Krishna. Therefore, we have the origin. You understand the origin, you can go back to it. But just as any other field, in dealing with the origin, you have to not become distracted by it. You understand? In other words, we know one of the Vedic sciences, we don't become that. Right? We know astrology, we don't become an astrologer. We know Ayurveda, we don't become a doctor. We know them, we use them as service. Then it works. But as soon as I am this, then what's the... Okay, it's a nicer I am this. Now it's a gold I am this rather than an iron I am this. Right? So it's a very important field, but to deal with it properly... then one has to accept the Vedic culture. And that's generally what devotees don't want to do. Then it comes back to our first point. They're rebellious. So that's why they can go out and they can make people favorable that, you know, we're nice guys, we're another nice yogi. But they may not be able to give the conclusions. Because they themselves don't actually believe in it as a culture. It's just... knowledge is something to dabble in. It's just it's like soft academics. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's just another intellectual. You know, it's like a cross between academics and artists. You know, like poetry. You know, it sounds nice and like that. It doesn't have to mean anything. It's just nice words. It was spoken nicely. It has a nice rhythm, a nice ring. Like that, it brought out a nice sentiment, that's good enough. So, like that. And add, you know, a little bit of intellectual to that, and bingo, you got it. So, we can so easily preach there if we accept our own culture. Probably gives so much. The literatures are there. But, we would rather walk into the bookshop and go over to the self-help section and take a book from there. Because they're professionals, they know naturally know better than devotees. Because we, our identity is criticizing devotees. Therefore, why devotees? You know, you see that a devotee could be professional in a field, but as a devotee, he manifests the mood of a devotee. No attitude of what his previous, you know, Purva Samskar is. Most devotees will not accept him as an authority in that field. But if he comes in with a whole attitude like the Karmis, then they'll think, oh, yes, he's very good. You know what I'm saying? It's just a phenomenon. If you're a devotee, you can't be very good. You can't be good at anything material. Therefore, we go to the materialist form. No. Only the devotee can be good at it. The others, they're good, but for how long? Right? Bill Gates goes from $90 billion to $40 billion in one day. That's a big loss. Right? That's $50 billion the guy just lost. And then he's called smart? If you lost $50 billion, what would people say about you? Yeah, this guy really knows what he's doing. You understand? Because he's got 40 billion left, we don't say much. Does that make sense? So the point is actually what's stable. You know, what is stable? Right? They weren't in control of that loss. Yudhishthir had the world, he lost it, but he was in control of that. Because it's his decision to follow Dharma. Right? He could have just told Bhima, you know, let's historify this Duryodhana and his friends. You know, it would be a nice discussion, historical discussion for our kids. You know, but he didn't, because he followed religious principles, and because of that, 5,000 years later, we're still listening to his story. Right. You know what I'm saying? Other people have done so much, who even remembers who they are? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Okay. So we're over the time now. Time's up. So we'll continue tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jāya Nitya Gaura Premanandi.